915 to H-Town, from the Panhandle Plains to the Valley, and everywhere in between. This is the 5050 Podcast, powered by College Promoters USA. Join me, Hector Cano, as we cover the Texas high school club and college soccer landscape, along with an inside look at the college soccer recruiting scene. The 5050 Podcast is a platform about the people and for the people who are dedicated to the beautiful game. Here we go. It's a very, very, very special edition of the 5050 Podcast. The 5050 Podcast, powered by College Promoters USA, our proud partners, College Promoters USA, America's premier college prep program and high school student athlete marketing service since 1997. For those of you in the local San Antonio area, you can find them in the Ventura Plaza Shopping Center, which is located at 434 North Loop 1604, Suite 3204. You can also find them on social media, on Twitter at SATX Recruiting, as well as on Instagram at College Promoters USA, as well as on their website at collegepromotersusa.com. My next guest, he is a, joins us for the second time, very special guest, personal close friend of mine, one who's pretty, who's very responsible for part of how my career has shaped. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, Coach. I don't know. I mean that as a compliment, but very happy to have him here, Coach Larry Friend, the head women's soccer coach of Air Force Academy, who was also ironically our very first guest on the podcast almost a year ago. So, Coach, how are you?
Hector, I'm good. It's good seeing you again, my friend.
Likewise. So, as always, cannot tell you enough just what an incredible barber you have. I love the haircut. And I also, I gotta brag. It's like I busted out the USAFA gear, the Air Force Academy gear, just for you on this very special occasion.
I know it has a special place in your heart.
Yeah, absolutely. So Coach, hey, let's dive right in. We're grateful to have you here, the 5050 Podcast team. And those of us here with our partners at College Promoters USA, this was kind of, dare I say, an emergency podcast almost because of certain things that have happened in the last few days. So tell me, Coach, how's it going? And is there, anything new in your life?
It's going great. You know, I announced my retirement the Monday before Thanksgiving, and just the outreach from alumni and other coaches in the industry was overwhelming. I probably had over 400 texts in the first, 24 to 48 hours after I announced. And I lost my voice the first two nights just trying to thank people and try to reach out. And I'm still playing catch up on that.
Right. I bet. What was that like? You know, that decision came down, I believe, what was it, Tuesday? Was that Tuesday night?
Monday.
Night? Monday. Okay. Yeah. So Monday night. And what was, once that kind of went out there, was obviously you didn't really know quite what to expect, but what was that like from, you know, first telling, sharing with the team to then the immediate, immediate response from, you know, class members, their staff members there in the athletic department, and then just, you know, classmates and whatnot and friends and family.
Ooh, that's a loaded question, Hector. But you're always good at that. So,
I know that's what I do best, Coach. That's why you got, that's why I'm no longer there.
Mary Beth and I, my wife, we'd been talking about it for a while of how do you leave and when do you leave? And there's never a good time to leave a college or high school team because there's always another class coming in.
Right.
There's always a group that you've gone in with their freshman year and you hope to finish out with them. And we initially were looking at the end of fall of 2020. We had looked at that time, it would have been 40 years in the Air Force and with the Air Force and the Air Force Academy, and been a long and amazing adventure. And it was just an honor to be a part of all that. But we were looking for the next adventure. But when COVID hit, it just felt like that would be an awful time to leave the team. They needed someone who was there to help them get through that. And so we did that. But then 21, you had a spring season, and there's no time between the 21 spring season and the fall season to hire a coach. So we rode through the fall season and had a great talk with my, you know, with my AD Nate Pine and my senior women's administrator, Jen Block. And they were very gracious to say, Larry, you've been here a while, you know, leave on your own terms. And so we looked at a June retirement date as when my contract closes out, but wanted to get the word out because this is the best time to try to hire a coach in the college game. And yeah, I think you and I were talking on the phone earlier this week about how many positions are open there. And so we want to get it out there. We wanted to make sure that people knew this is a great opportunity. The hardest thing was to tell the team. They were in complete shock. We told them the Monday before Thanksgiving, they get to fly home Tuesday. So hopefully they got some time with their family, and I've gotten a chance to follow up with a lot of them and, you know, letting them know, look, I'm going to be there through the transition. I'm going to be there all the way until we can get that new staff in, and then I can phase out, finish teaching a couple of boxing classes at the academy. And
there you go. There you
go. And then roll on to the next phase of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll, you know, we'll get to that a little bit more later. But yeah, I think that I imagine you look at it from the perspective of your family. And that's obviously one very unique perspective, you know, your wife, Mary Beth, and please tell her I say hi, but also, you know, your staff as well, you know, particularly your one who's also close to my heart, who I know very well, who's been there for me quite a bit, and Kia Sutta, Coach Kia. But also you look at it from the perspective of, you try to step in and look at it from the eyes of, you know, your cadet athletes there, right? They're on the team. So what was, obviously, they were in shock, but which I'm sure you probably kind of anticipated, but was their response, in whether it be not necessarily there immediately, but maybe a few days after, was it surprising to you, or was it maybe what you expected, or did you not know what to expect?
You know, it was a bit of what I expected. I think it's stuff that we're still going to go through together. I think they were loaded up with school. Again, a complete surprise to them. So, you know, when they get back from Thanksgiving, they're going to see me and the entire staff on the flip side. We've got a beat test to run, and we've been going through some strength and conditioning. And then in January, we'll be training in our indoor facility. And I think we'll get a chance to work through with everybody. I told them my job is to get them ready to be as fit and as sharp as possible so that they can make the best first impression on the new coach.
Right.
And their job is to look at this as an opportunity, you know, for some of those players who maybe didn't get to play as much, you know, it'd be nice for them to have a fresh set of eyes on them and give them a whole new look. And maybe that coach will look at them in a different way than I did with my staff. For some that have already been in a leadership role and been impactful on the field, they've got to integrate with this new coach, and maybe between the two of them, they can, continue to grow the program, get them a step farther along in the path, and get them to the conference tournament and hopefully an NCAA playoff berth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, then it's a great point because you talk about just transitioning going forward, but a quick look back into this last season, which by all accounts, you know, obviously at all levels, right, whether it was from club to definitely from high school, I can speak to it from a high school coach's perspective, and definitely college level, regardless of level, but especially at the D1 level, what was really, when you look back at this calendar year, what was a very trying, very tough, and very unique season, right? You know, you had your spring season in 2021, and then basically a very short turnaround, plus then the fall season, the traditional fall season, this past fall. When you look back on everything from the pandemic, the fallout, the response, the schedule you played after that, and then this fall, what are some of the lessons learned, or or in your eyes, are they kind of separate, or is it just, did it feel like just one big gigantic season in two portions?
Yeah, I think it was three portions. Going into the fall, first having our season slowly canceled as the, you know, the pandemic continued to get worse. You're looking at a senior class, whereas the Air Force Academy, you don't get a fifth year. You graduate, you go become a lieutenant. Right. That hit my seniors really hard. I think some of them never really got over that. I think it was just too painful for them to face. So we focused on the fall of 20 of just trying to keep it fun. You know, we played a blue silver match every Friday, you know, still pushed, still tried to, you know, get technical and tactical concepts out to the team, but just tried to make that as normal as possible. Look, we don't have any games for 4 months straight. So let's have fun with it. We even did a blue silver event in the stadium and live streamed it for the parents and got all dressed up in the uniforms just to give them a little something to look forward to. When we rolled into the spring and we knew it was going to be a condensed season, we were hoping to play Army and Navy, and unfortunately we were unable to put that together. The biggest thing was we had never had to come back fit. And what I mean by fit is they come back January fit from strength and conditioning training, but match fit, ready to go.
Match ready. Right.
And so and the only time that we had a facility available to us was dark 30 in the morning. So it was cold and quiet in that gigantic refrigerator called the Hack. Right. And, you know, so that was a different dynamic for the team as well. We were eating breakfast and then lunch down at the facility, which there was some unity in that. It was very, very great support by administration. But it was really, I think everybody had to learn to have an attitude of gratitude. Like, look, this is not what we planned for, but this is what we get. So how do we make this the best we can for each other and for the program? And, you know, I wouldn't say we were 100% successful, but I'd say that the effort was there to do it. And we had successful moments in that.
Yeah. And I think
one of the things I was going to say is that spring season was tough. We unfortunately had an insane weekend where we went out on the road and we had six season ending injuries in one weekend, quite a few starters. And so we finished the last four games of our season with 14 players. So we had four subs, a goalkeeper and three field players. And yet, you know, you wouldn't expect anything else from the cadets. They showed up, they went to work. They knew the odds were against them, but they grinded. And that's what you expect of our future Air Force officers.
Absolutely. And excuse me, you know, and then did you find, was it just getting through the spring that was maybe the toughest versus now you have to go on top of the recruiting efforts in which took forever to obviously be undone in late into the summer. But then, you know, you have what makes a service academy so different is now you have a new class coming in. They got to go through both phases of basic cadet training, and then you kind of hit the ground running for a very short turnaround and then get ready to start training in August. How was that phase handled as you started going into the 2021, the fall 2021 campaign?
Well, I mean, it's the beauty of the academy is you give them a challenge and the administration and all the leaders there are going to try to find a way to execute. And, you know, when COVID first hit, the three younger classes were sent home and the seniors were kept on campus. And we were able to do I guess, one of the first social distance graduations. Then, you know, rolling into that fall, it was, how do you continue to operate with all the restrictions around you? That was the story of 20. 21, I think it was, how do we get back to the definition of normal? So you're right. We finished the spring season. It was going to be a very quick turnaround for all the upperclassmen. But normally they would get a whole spring to them. New personalities would emerge. New leadership would arise. We didn't get that. So what we did is we had four meetings at the end of our season and said, okay, what worked? What didn't work? What do you guys want to change as you take this over? Because you don't get the whole spring to practice it. Right. You've got to lay it on the line and then immediately help integrate our freshman class, which was a very big one this year. We had 13 freshmen come in. And so when we had 30 on the entire roster. So when they're almost 50% of your team, you've got to teach what you want your culture to be very quickly. Right. We started on August 1st, and before you know it, on August 5th, we were flying out to Oklahoma to play them on August 9th. Mm-hmm. So it was a quick put it together and get the group going. I think that actually went quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I did see, if I recall, I think they were able to facilitate OU, that is, they were able to facilitate in supporting the cadet athletes in a kind of I think it was an acceptance day per mini parade there or mini event there. Is that right?
Yes. Mark Carr and his entire staff were they were incredible. Oklahoma, we flew in there on a Wednesday and we were able to eat in their dining facility right off the bat that first Wednesday until they closed down to get ready for their fall break. They opened up their facilities to us. We were able to train on their field. We worked around their training times. We then did, because we left so early, our freshman class didn't get to do their acceptance parade, which is where they get accepted into the cadet wing after basic training. So our team designed and put together our own acceptance ceremony, which, you know, our seniors did a phenomenal job putting that together. And Jason Egger was our officer representative. They just put together a heck of a ceremony. And Oklahoma, their team showed up, watched the event. And then we had a dinner with the two teams. And we just did some, you know, a little bit of exchange between the two programs on what you do to get ready. You know, how do you handle your confidence? How do you prepare yourself for a season? It was amazing. I mean, I didn't know Mark that well, and I think we became pretty good friends through the whole experience. And we were, you know, watching Oklahoma all season and rooting them on as I know he was texting me and rooting me on as our season went on. It was a neat experience, and their hospitality was unbelievable. I can't thank them enough.
Yeah. Definitely. Shout out to Mark, to Coach Carr, his team, his staff. They're definitely a first class outfit there. So and also a supporter of the podcast, by the way. So shout out to Coach Carr. So when you look at a little shameless plug there, but when you look at, we transition, Coach, here, and we look at, in staying with this past season, the fall of 2021.
Yeah.
I know what it was for me. Obviously, I was very aware of what a historic feat you all accomplished in being able to beat both Army and Navy in the same season, something that had never been done, you know, making history there, first time ever. Talk to us, take us through that ride. Well, because you guys played them relatively that was a very quick turnaround between both games. So what was that like?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, they both have very good programs. Karen's program in Navy has been very successful. And we played them first. And it was just fun. Like we got there the day before. We played George Mason first and then got over to the Navy. And we actually took a tour of their campus because one of our players' fathers is a Navy grad. So we just wanted to see their campus and get the whole experience. And it was a really hard fought match, which I expected. We hadn't played Navy in 20 years. So that was unique already, just getting the chance to play them. It came out of that game on a high, flew back. We got in probably around 2:30 in the morning on Sunday and they had to go to class Monday. We trained Monday. It was just a little bit of a giddy recovery, and then gave them Tuesday off, and then got on a plane Wednesday to fly out to West Point. you know, so to play both games back to back was really, it was a challenge, is what we were looking for. The fact that we won both just made it even that much sweeter. And same thing, we played West Point on a Thursday night and then got a tour of their campus on Friday and then flew back to get ready for one last pre-conference game before we rolled into conference.
Yeah. That's all. Not having played Navy in 20 years, as you said, that doesn't seem right. Right. I think we have to try to find a way to fix that for the future. So, all right. So now all the tough questions, Coach. Tell us, you know, big decision you recently made, that obviously was you put a lot of thought behind it, a lot of prayer behind it and speaking about it with the family. But what ultimately, what any one thing, was there a key piece, key element in terms of what led to your decision to want to go ahead and say, hey, this is the right time? And was there a moment when it hit you, when you're like, okay, yes, it's time?
You know, I think, you know, both of us, you know, coming from the Air Force, we know what an incredible experience that is, you know, serving your country, but it's also just an amazing group of people to be around. And the reality is I'd been around it for 40 years when we really started thinking about it. And coaching at the college level there's a tremendous amount of enjoyment with it, satisfaction with it, accomplishment. But, you know, it is also, it takes a tremendous amount of energy. You're constantly pushing people out of their comfort zone. Right. And as one of my old coaches, Charlie Straw, used to say is, look, there's no growth in the comfort zone and there's no comfort in the growth zone. And that takes a lot of emotional energy. And when you go through a season, it's 7 days a week from August through no matter how far you get through November. And so I just felt like at that time I still had the energy to give to them, but it was taking a lot more. And, you know, my family made a lot of sacrifices through all that. I got to go to a lot of their games when they were playing club soccer and even coach some of their teams, my three kids, Karina, Lexi, and Corey. But, you know, Karina went to school out in St. Mary's out in Minnesota.
Minnesota, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I only got to see her play for the Cardinals live twice in her entire 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and she had no hard feelings about that. We did get to see her on the live stream, but you get to a point where, you know, you've sacrificed so much to your country, to your teams, that it's time to try to move on and explore some different things in your life. So I think it was a slow evolution. There wasn't a single event where we won a game and said, okay, we beat Army and Navy, though that was really tasty. You know, to say now I can retire, or, oh, I didn't enjoy this player's personality. And so I need to get out of the game. It was just a slow, natural process with a lot of prayer, a lot of talks with the family, mainly with Mary Beth on just, how do we want to navigate the next phase of our life?
Right. Yeah. And that's a great point. I think I can definitely relate to that, having retired once as well from active duty, because it's, the thing is now, you know, you went from active duty, you retired, you went right into coaching. You were already coaching. So you always knew pretty much what you were going to have to wear, whether it was a uniform, active duty, or, you know, your instructor uniform there at the academy, or coaching gear. Now you're going to have to figure out what to wear every day all over again. Are you ready for that?
Hard. I mean, I've either been in a flight suit or a sweatsuit.
You know? Exactly. Exactly. You
know, whatever.
Maybe you just stay in the sweatsuit, right? Yeah. So, but yeah, no, for sure. I can definitely respect that. And I definitely know where you're coming from on that, for sure, Coach. So we look back, as you look back on your career, right? And you're obviously, you know, God knows you're going to have a lot more time to reflect and to look on this. But one of the things, one of the things that we kind of wanted to look at here is in terms of what we dubbed this episode of Career Reflections of a Servant Leader. As you look back on your career, whether it's just from the active duty side, the coaching side, the overlap, and you look at them both, especially your coaching side, you know, what are maybe some of the fond memories that kind of come to mind? And what are some of the things that maybe you can share with that young aspiring coach, regardless of level, right? Whether they're on the club side, high school side, college side, a young coach that's just entered the college side or want, or has aspirations to get into the club side. What are some of those things that you can share as you look back on your career, some of those lessons?
That's a good question. I think you have to love the game, and you have to realize that you're there to take a person from point A to point B. That's what coaching is. And I remember one time I was coaching a club team, and they were a good group team, but it wasn't a team that you would say was going to be college bound, most of those players. And I had some dads help me, and they're like, man, how do you do this? How do you go from coaching at the academy to this team? I said, because coaching's coaching. You know, like when we teach them something new and you see the joy on their face when the light bulb clicks and they're like, right. Oh, if I just move into this space, the game can be so much easier for me. If they pick up a new skill set, then, you know, and you see that, you enjoy the fact that you're moving them towards point B. Right. The dads, I just said to them, I said, what you're frustrated about is you don't like where the point A is. You right. want point A to be farther along. Or the other thing a coach can get frustrated with is how long it takes to get from point A to point B. And so I think there's a bit of that. You push them like today's the last day you're going to train. However, you've got to be patient with the growth of your players, not only just as players, but as people. And if you forget that aspect of it, that you need to care about your student athletes as players and as people, and you need to meet them outside of just soccer, so they know that they're a human being that you care about, not just a commodity that puts a ball in the back of the net for you. You're going to find your experience is going to be a lot more positive, and you're going to enjoy what you give and what you get. And I feel like I got a lot more from all the years of players that I had through this whole process. You know, there are things at the academy that, you know, that those funny moments of a freshman, you know, coming out of basic training and then trying to integrate with the team. You know, there's moments on the bus when they will sing for an hour straight, you know, and I act like I don't like it, but I think deep down I really do like it, you know? And so there are all those fun moments that I'll cherish. All the people that I've got to meet across the industry, you know, just coaches that, you know, we've shared with our recruiting challenges, our coaching challenges, how to manage academics, and overall time management between soccer and school. Just all the stuff I've come across. I've had several coaches tell me, though, that I've been blessed to live two lives, because there's that whole other world that I was in, flying helicopters,
right, you know,
and flying over Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines and resupplying a school for the deaf down in the southern part of the Philippines. It was just unbelievable. Right. Flying over in Okinawa and up in Korea and being at a search and rescue conference in Hong Kong and resupplying radar stations down in the Bahamas and doing a 360 around the Statue of Liberty. Those are just all cool experiences that I've gotten through this whole Air Force thing. But I would say the biggest thing is the people. All those experiences were fun, but it's just all the people, especially in the Air Force community, you know, the people that I worked for, the people that I worked with, and the people that I led. All those will be the things that I'll miss the most about the Air Force and the Air Force Academy.
Yeah. And, you know, I can attest that you've definitely up to, you know, obviously, and it's going to continue. So I don't want to make it sound like it's over, but you've lived your best life so far. And a ton of respect. You know, one of the things I wanted to share, why I really wanted to have you on here as well, and we're grateful for you joining us, is, you know, the opportunity for me to recognize you and to thank you for all that you've done for me, kind of helping shape my career, helping mentor me, being there for me, and knowing when I needed you to step in as kind of as my head coach, and knowing when I needed you, or when you needed to step in as more so as my friend. And I'm eternally grateful for all that you've done for my family and I. We'll never forget it. And I mean, it's just, it goes without saying, you know, it's one of the things that I would, you know, I would expect, but I'm also grateful for and have a ton of respect, because it's, you know, you have a servant leader's heart, and I'm grateful for that. I learned a ton from you, and, you know, forever grateful for our time that we had together there while I was at the Air Force Academy as well.
Hector, you're the only coach I've ever had that was also a sniper in the Air Force. I mean, you know, and that's just the neat part is here's two Air Force guys. Yeah. We met on a soccer field. You know, you were working with the Pride Soccer Club, and then you came and worked our sports camps. And then you got on with the prep school, and then you came, we brought you into our program, and you became our interim head coach during the government shutdown. And so you had to play a whole lot of different roles, but all of them working with you was just a lot of fun. And I'm glad you're still in it and still giving back to the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And you all, you know, you, Kia, so many good people, you know, we talk about administrators and, you know, staff there within the athletic department, and they're at the Air Force Academy. You know, USAFA, you know, the Air Force Academy has a big piece of my heart, and I'm still definitely follow it closely, as you know. And now I'm grateful to see that some of those recruits that we brought in, and then that we were able to coach and these cadet athletes that went on and graduated, now some of them are captains, you know, in the you know, active duty Air Force, which is, it's humbling. It makes you proud, and it's also scary, but yeah, it's a great thing. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. If we talk about thank yous, I mean, first, just starting with my own club coaches, you know, Mike Curry was a big factor in my life. Larry Jobson, my high school coaches, you know, George Cronin, then moving into the academy and Lou Sagastumi, who's a legend in the game. You know, Lewis is probably forgotten more about soccer than I know. Charlie Straw and Carl Olson. Carl went on to coach us on the U.S. Armed Forces team. And, you know, we could spend the next hour just thanking people, you know, right. And then going on to my assistants, with Donald Neuer and Raleigh Tillman, and then rolling into working with Jamie Bergner and Brandon Jones, and you know, those two guys were both former players along with Donald on the men's team. And, you know, then bringing in Kia, who has a special place in my heart, Kia and Jensen and her two boys, Perry and Easton. I mean, we built something together, and right. We embraced what the Academy stands for. Like, yeah, we want to win soccer games and be a competitive in the athletic realm, but we also want to embrace the Academy and the military jobs. And of course, you got to brace the academics, because that's the fastest way out the door if you don't take care of that. You know, and Key and I were together for 11 years. And special shout out to, you know, Missy Strausberg, who, you know, now is a head coach at Eastern Washington. And
Missy.
Missy was with us for 5 years as well. And now we got Sierra Taylor there, who played at ASU and was a national puller back in the day. And she's just come in with a whole lot of new energy and is a new force in the program. And of course, I can't forget Brian Bernowski, who has been our volunteer coach. And I actually called him when he was the director of Rush. And I said, hey, I'm looking for a goalkeeper coach. And he goes, well, if you can't find one, I'll step in. That was 4 years ago as well. So, you know, it's just the people you run across through the whole experience that just makes it amazing. But focusing on your state, you were talking about some of the people going out, you know, of our four graduates, two are going to pilot training, and we have two Texans. One is going into intelligence, and the other one is going into cyber operations. And so, I'm just proud of our two Texans that are going to graduate. And along with, we've got one from New Mexico who'll be going to pilot training, and one from Colorado who's also going to pilot training.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome to hear. And yeah, for sure. I mean, always definitely keep those stories coming about Texans that are up there playing for you all. And I know the Air Force Academy does well in terms of recruiting the great state of Texas. So
you know, it's, This fall, you know, you were asking how was that fall season, and we were young, we were gritty. There's a lot that young team's got to learn, you know, how to prepare for games, how to manage games, how to find a way to win. And a lot of those 13 freshmen, it was trial by fire. You know, I told the group, you're probably not as talented as the 2019 team was, but you're definitely more even from top to bottom, and you're definitely unified. You know, we had 30 players on the roster, of which 28 were healthy to play, and 27 of the 28 got into games and got minutes and were able to contribute to the program. And 24 different players started based on how they performed in practice. And so I think there's a good core there rolling into the fall of 22. And we do have we've got 13 freshmen coming in right now, four from your state, you know, so nice.
Very good. Very good. You know,
the Texans will be well represented, coming into the fall season.
All right. That's awesome. Glad to hear that for sure. And, so, coaches, we kind of start transitioning here a little bit more. I know you are a no regrets kind of guy, but in terms of these leadership reflections, what's one piece from a leadership perspective, especially as you got in when you maybe started coaching, and what maybe took you a while to either you knew it but you just didn't buy into it, or maybe it just naturally the maturation process. It's something you wish would have picked up on sooner, that you would recommend from a leadership and managerial perspective, which, as we all know, is so much of the piece of coaching beyond just X's and O's. What is maybe the one thing you would recommend if you could go back, not do over, but maybe do sooner?
That's a good question. I think it goes back to a quote by Billy Walker. Billy was in charge of physical education at the Air Force Academy. He's now the athletic director at American University. Billy and I also flew helicopters together, so he was my boss in the helicopter world, and then he became my boss back in the teaching world and coaching world back at the academy. And one of the things he used to always say is, you got to be efficient with the mission, but effective with people. And I think if there was something I could do sooner, it was be more effective with people. Have them know that I really try to listen to them, that, you know, that we're all making a sacrifice for the team. And so you've got to give up some of your personal freedoms to do that. But to let them know that they're still important as individuals. And, you know, if I could have been better at that sooner, as opposed to, you know, maybe I was a little less patient as a younger coach. I didn't hear both sides of the story before I went on, and still had to make the tough decisions. Still got to put a lineup together. Still got to be consequences for people not getting to practice on time. But I would say that it's back to what Billy said, you know, just be efficient with the mission, but be effective with people.
Nice. I like that. I like that. You know, and that's one of those things too, where I guess from a different perspective, when you look back on it, what is maybe in your time there as, you know, as the head coach, what's the one thing that you are maybe most proud of when you look back on it? So many things to be proud of, but if you really kind of had to push everything to the side and push one to the front, what do you think that would be?
For the Air Force Academy, I think I can say that's a project that my staff and I always worked on, was at the end of the day, you're going to graduate and become an officer in the Air Force. You're going to lead other people. And I'm proud of the way we had the group embrace the entire institution and embrace all the values, the core values of the Academy, you know, and that whole concept of, you know, integrity first, service before self, excellence in all you do is just, I think we're proud of the fact that when we see how well our graduates are doing in the Air Force, right. I just burn with pride on that. Right. And, you know, I had to call the toughest calls after telling the team was the 13 freshmen that have committed to the Academy.
Right.
And you know, we build a good relationship with them, and there's some sadness that I'm not going to be able to coach them, and there's some sadness that they're not going to be able to play for me. But the reality is, when we talked about it, I'm like, you didn't choose the Air Force Academy just for the coach. You were choosing for much larger reasons. And it's one of those classic lines, nobody's bigger than the program. It's right. My time to move on. And Hector, you and I both have had commanders who, you know, you have a change of command and a new commander takes over the unit. And the very next day, you got to get out there and still do your job. And so all 13, after talking with them, are like, yep, I'm 100% in. I'm still going to come to the academy. Right. So I think that the transition from me to the next coach will be much smoother than what happens at other institutions. Yeah. At least that's what I hope.
Yeah. It takes me a while, but it takes me back to when I was there and I got there pretty early, and, you know, we started talking about recruiting and whatnot, and excuse me. And I remember being told very early that it's like, hey, it's just, obviously we're a very unique institution as a service academy. And if you can, you know, we recruit, we have to go after a very, very, very special type of individual, right? And that's for anybody attending the Air Force Academy, attending a service academy, not just the cadet athlete. So naturally, I remember being told very early when I got there that, you know, if you can recruit at a service academy, you can recruit anywhere. So it speaks to the volumes of just the cadet athletes, the student athlete that we go after there. And it takes a very special individual to want to raise their hand, take that oath, and go forward. And one of the things that I was most proud of, really, when people would ask me about my time in coaching at the Air Force Academy, was that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we all know student athletes that compete, regardless of level, the overwhelming majority of them, we know that they're not going to go pro in their respective sports. But their job at the end of the day is you go to college, you go to school to ultimately earn a career, right? Get a job. You know, you go to the Air Force Academy and you graduate there from one of the best institutions in the country. And your job, you already have a job. Your job is to go lead and defend, you know, a country, right? And that's such an awesome responsibility. But every time I would talk about that, it still, to this day, still kind of gets the, you know, get the goosebumps just thinking about it. So I love sharing that. What's that?
I was just say, I think the beauty of it is, you know, especially for a female to make this choice, it's getting more normal, but
right.
It's still, you know, for years, it was very much a male dominated society. And it took a lot of courage for a female to raise their hand to do that. Because all schools have their recruiting challenges, be it the cost of the school, the location. With ours, you got to be very high academically. I mean, 40,000 are going to inquire and they're going to take a class of 1,200. For the women to stand up and take that challenge, I think the first thing we have to show them is just how normal everybody at the academy is. I really look at them as they're ordinary people trying to accomplish something extraordinary.
Right.
And they get to see that, like, yeah, they're all, you know, they have high dreams, they have high goals. They're like-minded people there, but they're normal. They still laugh at the same thing. They still come from this great society
absolutely.
That feeds the Air Force Academy. Yeah. And, you know, I'm always impressed every time someone decides to say, yeah, you know what? I know it's going to be hard. I know I'm going to be challenged, but I wasn't put on this earth to be average. I was put here and I want to accept that challenge and I want to see if I can do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He is Coach Larry Friend, head women's soccer coach of the Air Force Falcons. Coach, obviously I know you told us you're still here. You're going to be here through the transition phase, but what are your thoughts as best as you can share, I guess, what are your thoughts on the program going forward?
I think there's a lot of upside. I think it's a very strong class coming in, and they'll be joining a group that showed that they can compete in the Mountain West Conference. You know, we dropped our last three games. You know, we lost 1-0 to San Diego. Mike has a very good program out there, but it was a very even match. Right. They scored in about the 70th minute of the game. But we felt like we had a chance to win that game the entire way through. And then we dropped 2-1 to New Mexico. And Heather's, you know, gotten to the NCAAs twice. She runs a remarkable program down there. And you know, that was another game that we felt was very even. They did a better job of managing the game and taking advantage of their opportunities. So walked out of that 2-1 and then finished up at Colorado College with Jeff Bennett, who has also just stepped down so that he can enjoy some time with his family. Right. And that was a 1-0 game where they dominated the first half. And, you know, we did very well in the second half. And so losing is not fun. Winning's right. fun. But I think this group walked away knowing that it was really only one game all season where another team just took it to us. That we were very competitive and even with everybody that we played. And I think this freshman class joining the returning veterans, it's going to be a unique blend. It's going to be exciting to see how the new staff puts that group together. They're surely talented enough to compete in the conference. Now they just got to mature a little bit and find those things that I was talking about, you know, the understanding the group defending, you know, game management, knowing when to speed the tempo up, when to slow it down. And then eventually you've got to find a way to win.
Yeah. 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 And that's, and you know, it's an interesting take, a great take, obviously. And I know you'll have them ready to go as best as you can in with the eventual new coach coming in, coach and coaching staff. So for sure. So two final questions, your thoughts, the D1 NCAA College Cup coming up, Santa Clara, Rutgers, BYU, Florida State. Going to put you on the spot here. Who wins it all? What's your take, hot take on that?
You know, first of all, what was exciting about the College Cup is that when you got to the round of 16, there were 5 unseeded teams
right
that made it that far. And Santa Clara was one of them. So I wouldn't count out Santa Clara because they've been there before. That is a group that, Jerry and Greg Murphy, who's from Colorado Springs, and Curtis, they get them prepared. Yeah.
They got every reason to have a serious chip on their shoulder because, I mean, you want to say it's like, hey, are we not the defending national champs here? It's like we get the Rodney Dangerfield of the West Coast. They're just, I'm just like these guys are the defending champs. It's like, and they're just not. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but that's my take on it. I think, but then you talk about, BYU, right? BYU making a big statement versus South Carolina yesterday. So you have 2 West Coast Conference teams. And then you have a Big Ten team in Rutgers. And then the team that I guess everyone is really looking at and number one team in the country, Florida State. What's your take when you look at all of those?
I mean, the parity is incredible. I mean, BYU used to be in our conference before they moved to the WCC. And, they were always, Jen's always done a good job with them. And Chris, her assistant, then moved on to Gonzaga. They are in your face competitive. And so, when you look at all 4 teams, any one of them could win this thing. That's the beauty of women's soccer now is that there's so much more parity in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm still going to tilt. Whew, it's tough.
I know.
It's tough.
I know.
I'm still going to go with last year's national champions.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to. Everything, my gut tells me that we're destined for a rematch, but there's just something that tells me that I don't know. BYU is going to have something to say about that because they're a tough group. They're a tough group, talented, tough group. But yeah, so for sure. All right, Coach. So last question, final thoughts. Tell us some any future plans, you and Mary Beth. Once you kind of ride into the sunset, what are your initial thoughts on that?
First, we're knee deep in. I'm going to be going out recruiting at Tennessee, the ECNL event. And then Sarah and I will also both be at Silver Lakes. And so we need to keep this thing going, this program going. I need to slowly untangle myself from the US government and work towards that retirement part.
Good luck.
Yeah. Hopefully things will, as a new staff gets in and they get on their feet, then things will slow down for me. And then Mary Beth and I, we do plan on doing some traveling and visiting some family and friends. My brother's in Bulgaria. You know, I look forward to seeing my uncle in Garmisch in Germany. Mary Beth's always wanted to get to Rome. Yeah. So we're going to get to Italy, and she's already doing some volunteer work and doing some consulting. I'll be looking to join her in the area of where can I volunteer my time to continue to be a person of service. Yeah. And we'll balance all that out and see what unfolds and where we get led to next.
Right, right. Well, hey, it's not as exotic as Bulgaria, but if you're ever in San Antonio, let me know. All right. So I expect you to let me know, and we'll definitely come look at some talent, talk some soccer, whatever, and have a great time. So, any final thoughts, Coach, as we start wrapping up?
No, I appreciate you, Hector. I'm so thankful to the game. I mean, it's given me so much. I never thought when I was a little, 10-year-old kid in Columbia, Maryland, that it would take me down this path. And, from there into playing for Soccer Association of Columbia and then moving into Wild Lake High School, just all the people I've met along the way who were so selfless and gave themselves because of a sport they love and what they wanted to teach to the next generation. And I hope that those that I worked with will get a chance to do the same for the next generation of players coming through. It's a different world, as we know it. We've gone through a lot in the last few years. I think there's going to be a lot more accountability, both on coaches and on players, to work together to make a program successful. And I'm just so thankful for all the people that I met through this wonderful game.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear. Happy to hear it, Coach. He is Coach Larry Friend, head women's soccer coach of the Air Force Academy Falcons. Coach, cannot thank you enough. Forever grateful for you to blessed to have you join us, but more blessed to have you in my life. And you've been a big impact on me, and you've helped my family and I as well. I wish you nothing but the absolute best as you start on your next journey. Always here for you. Let me know if you need anything. To our listeners, thank you again for all your support. Continue, subscribe to us on YouTube. You can find us at the 50_50 podcast on YouTube. Subscribe, leave reviews, as well as, as on Twitter, you can find us at the 50_50 pod, as well as on Instagram at 50_50 podcast. So you're the reason why we do it. Coach, again, thank you for your time. Sincerely appreciate you. Wish you nothing but the absolute best going forward. To our listeners, you know what to do. Until the next time, keep downloading and keep listening.